Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
Hey, that's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air. On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Just want to let you know no animals were harmed in the recording of accordion music during this program. Thanks for joining us. Happy baby noises and more for you each and every morning with Morning Air on Relevant Radio. Sarah and Glenn in for John today. Thanks so much for being here. We'll talk change. We'll do that with Dave Duran before the hour is through. An Advent story corner coming up. A great look at some Advent traditions with Father Marcel Tyon in just a moment. First off, we say good morning to Sarah. And Sarah, as we make our way through the first full week of Advent here, any particular traditions you're looking forward to, remembering you haven't done anything for yet or have coming up in your household?
Oh, gosh, Glenn, every time you talk about Christmas traditions, why does my mind, the first thing it goes to is food? I don't know. Anybody else is going straight to food. Oftentimes, our traditions do center around that. My husband's family, they like to make tamales, and my side of the family, we like to make those Christmas cookies. So those are some of the big holiday traditions. In Advent, in some of the traditions revolve around trying, now that the kids are a little bit older, trying to get some, at least a few minutes of adoration time and taking everybody to confession kind of thing. But, there's always room for more traditions. That is the good thing about the Christmas and other kind of traditions. You know, we're trying to incorporate what works best for this time in our lives, because there's different seasons where you can do more or do less. What are the big traditions that you look forward to, Glenn?
Well, we'll both get a chance to talk about that as well. But, becoming an adult convert, kind of learning to differentiate a little bit more, even though Advent was celebrated as a Lutheran too, but to kind of differentiate a little bit between that Advent time and Christmas time coming up. So it's more of a blend, I think, as we get a little bit closer. But when you talk about Christmas cookies, I do think back fondly to the one year, I think it was about 12 or so, and I was an only kid, but my grandmother, we'd usually go to visit her. She lived a couple hours away. She came to stay with us for about a week, one Christmas season, and that meant me giving up my room on the main floor for her, and I would be upstairs in the, we had a story and a half house, and it worked out as a good bedroom during college. We didn't use it a lot before that, but there was a bed up there, and it was kind of cool up there. We didn't always heat it, just to save on the heating for the house, but it was on the other side of a door that led upstairs, and the other side of that door was nice and cool, was a perfect place to store those Christmas cookies.
Nice.
But the thing was, with me sleeping up there that week, I was on the Christmas cookie side of the door, and the steps weren't too noisy, so I could kind of creep down there and eat until I, it was kind of aversion therapy, I think, with Christmas cookies.
Yeah, right.
All I wanted and a whole lot more, but got some great and beautiful and even more serious Advent preparation ideas as we talk with Father Marcel Tyon today. Father Tyon, great to have you along.
Great to be here. Happy Advent.
Happy Advent to you as well. Hey, I want to ask you right off the bat, and we have a fabulous list of some great ideas for Advent preparation too, but for yourself, any particular traditions? Or as a priest, you get a different vantage point of everything as the season progresses, and things you most look forward to each year during this time of year.
I mean, honestly, the liturgy cycle helps me out tremendously. I look forward to the scripture readings. I think the Advent scripture readings are the antithesis of secular consumerism, and I always find maybe hiding is too strong a word, but resting and sheltering before Christmas in the liturgy. So I find we're blessed to, a priest pays what's called Liturgy of the Hours, the breviary, but also the daily Mass readings, the colors of purple, the Advent wreath, all those things I find a very peaceful serenity in that. I look forward to the liturgical season. I find it helps me. It's sort of everything, aesthetics, readings, kind of a reflective season, which really helps me out. I do enter into that, and I'm attracted to it naturally. I think even since I'm a kid, I remember liking Advent. I know everyone's excited about Christmas, and I am too, but for some reason, the Advent season has always kind of overshadowed me in my life. So I love Advent. I think it's a gift right off the bat. So I just can't say enough about it. I'm attracted to Advent very much.
Well, in starting with kids, as we look at traditions, helping to build or carry on some of those traditions, make sure we're, you know, maybe checking the box on a few of them so that they're a regular part of what we do. But kids seem to really enjoy tradition, and actually I had a chat about this the other day with a guest, as far as sometimes if we as adults might not remember something, the kids will, and especially maybe if the family's moved around a few times through the years, it helps them kind of focus a little bit if we do build those traditions starting very young.
Yeah, and I think like a simple one's the Advent wreath, and you know, you can go and purchase one or get one online, but it's still not too late to do that. But I think even more fun is taking kids out to, if you live in a place that has greens in a neighborhood or somewhere without getting arrested or stealing something, but going out and having the kids maybe cut the greens down and get some berries, go get the candles, explain the symbols of the colors of the candles. But I think building an Advent wreath is great, because an Advent wreath sits right plop smack in the living room or the dining room or a place that's prominent in the home, and it's a daily reminder that Advent is here. So that's a simple thing to do, and it doesn't have to be pretty, it just has to be done. And I think the more the kids build it, I think they'll remember that throughout their life. It'd be something, a great tradition to start. I think another one is, obviously, hopefully you have a manger in your house, and even if you're a grandparent or grandkids come over, but maybe having them help set it up, and obviously not putting the baby Jesus in until Christmas Eve and kind of noticing that he's not there and so on and so forth. But that's another thing to do. I think even the Christmas tree, whenever families put that up, but that can also be a great family activity, and it's kind of maybe making sure there's some kind of religious ornament on the tree, maybe a manger or some kind of very Christian symbol, the star, kind of have some biblically inspired ornaments, not just, again, Christmassy ones, but something more Christian. And I think kids could do that. They could make an ornament of some sort, draw something depending on their age, and just put that on the tree. And even if they're little, they drew something kind of, you can't really tell what it is, but you leave it on there, and the next year you pull it out and say, what's this? You know, and I think that would be kind of fun, right? And maybe mom and dad can make an ornament too that maybe not wouldn't pass the art judgment class, but I think those kind of things are also very helpful, kind of being creative, being interactive with one another. I've seen Advent calendars you can kind of get kind of easily today where you open the door, especially if you have little ones, it's very exciting depending on the age level, but opening the door every day before school or after school or before dinner, kind of having that Advent punch come into the day, maybe around grace time, or doing something like that is also great. The Advent calendar is good. It's kind of a countdown to the Christmas season. There's that. I think we mentioned going to confession as a family, just making it, or you know, up here in the Northeast, we have what's called La Salette Shrine in Massachusetts. Many families go there to look at the lights, but there's also confessions there. You know, local parish churches, usually on Saturdays, maybe other times, Advent confessional service, going to confession and going out for breakfast, sort of having a celebration after that is always good. I think kids will remember that if mom and dad take them to the confessional. They'll remember you went, and they'll see it's a family activity. It's a value, and grandparents can do this too in a very nonchalant, beautiful way. And then I think going out to celebrate, going to wherever the favorite little snack or ice cream parlor is to get a little something with them, celebrating the being in a state of grace and Jesus' mercy, which is the ultimate preparation for Christmas, right? The soul, like the crib, prepare the crib, and so on and so forth. So there's that. And I think also, you know, just touring our kids around the churches, noticing the purple, noticing the Advent wreath in church. Maybe it might be a nice time to do a church tour. I love that. Sometimes we haven't toured our own churches where there's stained glass or statues, and kind of introducing the new generation to all the symbolism. It might make us study a little bit too. Sometimes people don't know the artwork in their own parish churches, I find, and they get enamored when they start to discover it, all the rich sort of the spiritual museums we have that we go to every Saturday and Sunday. If you've got kids running in and out or in the cry room, not the best time to maybe show them around the church, but say after Mass one day or come early and kind of do that little bit of a tour and a little bit visits to the Blessed Sacrament. Those kind of things can also be great memories that people will take forward with them.
Father Marcel Tayon is our guest. He's a pastor at St. Thomas More Parish in Narragansett, Rhode Island, talking about creating and carrying on some of those Advent traditions, especially with kids, getting those things started. And then when we see the joy in their eyes when we do those things each and every year, a great way to remind us of this season that we're in as well. Anything from heading to confession and making it a positive thing, reminding kids of, you know, after, well, like you said, whether you go out for some treats after or just thinking as adults, you know, we go in looking a little grumpy perhaps, and come out with a smile on her face. And as we're walking to the car, we wonder why everybody looks so dour going in. Well, that's kind of the what happens at confession. We turn that frown upside down. But some of the other things we mentioned, too, I love the idea of getting the kids very involved. Like I said, even making an Advent wreath if possible, and nativity scenes, talking about that, and the importance, I think, of having a nativity scene that the kids can play with. It's great to have some maybe hand, you know, very nice pieces handed down that just need to sit there on the mantle and please don't touch. But to have some, you know, I mean, even some children's toy companies make nativity scenes made for kids to play with, but allow, as kids love to, you know, talk their dolls and animals and whatnot, to let them do that with a nativity scene can be a great thing. And then just to kind of sit back and listen, that's a blast and a good gauge of how you're doing with your faith instruction in the home as well. One of the other things coming up here is St. Nicholas Day in just a little bit. And this is something, not growing up Catholic, didn't experience this tradition. But I think now, as someone who is an empty nester, you know, there's still plenty of shoes to go around. As a matter of fact, my wife has a lot of shoes. And, you know, if I were to thoroughly celebrate St. Nicholas Day, putting goodies in shoes, that might be a more expensive day than Christmas Day in my house, perhaps.
Maybe you have her pick one pair of shoes. And I would pick the least expensive one in the spirit of Advent and put it in those. Kind of an attraction there. But yeah, St. Nicholas Day, right? The Feast of St. Nicholas, we know Santa Claus or Sinterklaas is a German tradition. Really, it's really the roots of Santa Claus is St. Nicholas Day. And St. Nicholas was a bishop and who went around and left little things in a very poor neighborhood, left gifts to cheer the children. I love that in Italy, I lived in Italy a few years for seminary, and blessed to see that, you know, the sort of people get gifts, little gifts after Christmas up to the gift of Epiphany. It's sort of like here in the United States, the big bang, the big gift drop is always on Christmas morning. And in Europe, in some Catholic countries, it's still that kind of the more I call it the St. Nicholas tradition. You get the gifts after Christmas, and they're slow and steady and not grandiose. So I like that. St. Nicholas Day might be December 6th, might be the mini Christmas, right? So we can actually, maybe if you have grandchildren, you could get them a little chocolate or something, a little figurine, a little something about St. Nicholas, or St. Nicholas is great to hang on the tree. Again, he tends to look like a bishop because he was a bishop, a saint, and has the, you know, the crozier and the mitre. And it might be a nice way to, you know, again, we still have time. It's not right now today, but still time to get ready for that. And that'd be a surprise, fun, educational, catechetical moment in a family to celebrate St. Nicholas Day. And maybe you could put some chocolate in the shoes of your kids so before they leave for school, and a little note, a quote from St. Nicholas or something, and kind of being creative, celebrating that day. And I think that's a good way to go. I think, you know, there's so many things we can do with baking and cooking, and kids love to bake and cook, but making things in the shape of a cross, or trying to make the star from the east, you know, the three wise men, and trying to make cookies in the shapes of religious symbols. Not an easy task, but a possible one, a way to have a discussion and to have fun with that. So I think kind of if we do Christmas cookies, we can always try to bring some Jesus in there when they're not looking, and we bring that in as kind of a fun discussion, and maybe have a contest, a cross-making cookie contest, or something like that, something that has to do with Jesus Christ, and to just gently bring the Lord and his fingerprints on all these activities which we can do. I think it's a nice time to be creative, find people. Some people are just really good at that, but even if you're not, this might be Advent might be the season to really give it a shot, I would say.
Had a family of friends that would do the big gift giving for all the kids on St. Nicholas Day, actually, and that kind of made them the envy of the neighborhood. They got their toys early, but then it turned out, you know, by Christmas they, you know, were kind of missing the fact that others were opening things too, and I think they've modified that over time. But to not overlook December 6th, St. Nicholas Day is a time to celebrate here during Advent a little bit as well. One of the things for Advent we do, and we, you know, got out a lot of decorations over Thanksgiving weekend, and looking at the candle supply for the Advent wreath there, and we did find a new big white candle to be the Christ candle this year. And as a matter of fact, we were ready to go with like brand new all the other candles too, in addition to having, you know, a week or two left of the old candles. We don't start new each time, but, you know, burn it down. And always enjoyed that as a kid, and for some reason didn't turn into a pyromaniac, but always enjoyed getting to light the candles as a kid.
Yeah, no, I... No, I'm with you. I think again, you know, obviously kids and fire need to be careful, but children do remember. As a kid, I loved being an altar boy because I could play with fire and it was blessed. As a home, I get in trouble. At church, I got an award. So I thought, I mean, gosh, no wonder I love serving Mass. You know, of course, Jesus was there, but it's true. I still remember, you know, Father Sharon letting me light the candles and even light the incense. I was probably in fourth grade, fifth grade. I thought I was, you know, Superman. I couldn't believe it. Again, the very thing gets you in trouble at home, gets you accolades at church. So church is awesome. But I think at home, too, even explaining the lighting of the candles and letting a child safely do that and then hiding all the stuff, the matches and things, of course. But I think there's something about that. The fire speaks that it has a power and doing that. But even the Christ candle, you know, maybe lighting that on Christmas Day, having that burn through Christmas dinner and the gift giving, those kind of things are great. I know some families put candles in front of the manger. I know one family, several families actually, that they'll take those little tea lights, votive lights, and light it during Advent in front of the empty crib where Jesus is going to be. I like that. And then putting it out after dinner. And then obviously once the baby's there, they don't do that anymore. But I like that. Using that, you can also use those kind of battery-operated fires, so there's no threat of danger for your kids, but they can actually pick them up and nothing will happen. But that's another way to go. You can even use those tea lights. I think nobody would be upset if you have really little kids to use those tea light things, battery operated candles, mm-hmm. for your Advent. Mm-hmm. If you can get, again, getting creative like that so they can participate and not be, and you're not afraid of the fire if you leave the room, but I think that's another way to go to just being super, super creative, super fun, and also catechetical and prayerful. And again, offering prayers and all those kind of things can be just so helpful and really wonderful. We're excited here at my parish. We're doing a petting zoo outside our manger in a couple of Sundays. It's always something I've wanted to do. So we have 12 animals coming outside and hoping it's outside them and getting the kids and families to come to the manger by using the petting zoo to catechize. So I know it's getting a good reception so far. We've never done it, but I'm excited. I'm still trying to think, how can we be out of the box and do something new, something different for Advent to attract kids to the manger? And I wouldn't recommend a petting zoo at your house. However, I think, again, going to shrines, going to a new church, and once Christmas comes, you know, all these churches have beautiful mangers in them. They're all radically different. You can go on a manger tour on a Sunday morning or try a new church and take a look and go to these. We have wonderful shrines around the country. And maybe, you know, again, going to St. If you live in the New York area, going to see the manger of St. Patrick's in New York is always a great thing to do. You can see the tree in Rockefeller Center, but making a pilgrimage to St. Patrick's and other places like that where you live, I think those things are also good as well. To go say a prayer with the children, they won't forget that. And you can ask them what to pray for, and you get to know what's in their heart as well. Advent's a great time to spiritually share with one another kind of the things we are longing for in this season that is a hope-filled season. So that's another way we can go too.
Yeah, I've seen a few live nativity scenes at churches over the years. One nearby does it on a particular day or two during the Advent season. And downtown Minneapolis used to have a very, very large procession as well of animals. It was kind of very interesting. But to look at the little ones, look at that with awe and wonder, helps them imagine what it might have been like with even the animals seeming to be amazed at the birth of the Christ child. And get their stuffed animals around the nativity scene at home to let everyone gather in and let them know that all creation can worship the Creator. And so over the years too, we've had that nativity scene expand with some new characters that might not be in the classic Fontanini set that one would get, but a few animals along the way. Heading back to the Advent wreath once again, I hadn't run across this till I saw this beautiful list that you passed along as we're looking at Advent traditions with Father Marcel Tyone, but that was kind of turning that Christ candle into a Mary candle.
Yeah, there is a custom of that. Again, I hadn't heard too much of it, but I know it exists out there. That would be the Christ candle on December 8th, the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception, which is our feast in the United States, right? Mary's the patroness of the United States. Each country has a patron or patroness. We're blessed to have Mary under the title of the Immaculate Conception, so that would be a great day. So, again, suggesting putting a blue ribbon around the Christ candle or around a statue of Mary, like highlighting her in the house that day and decorating her statue, flowers or a ribbon or candles around her that day. Again, another way to get ready for Christ coming. Mary's the perfect Advent model and example for us, but I think having an image of her. So we've got St. Nicholas Day on December 6th. We've got Mary on December 8th. We've got that Gaudete Sunday, you know, coming up, you know, when everything goes pink and rose at the churches. So I think highlighting that, doing a celebration that day, maybe a baking or kind of a festive Advent day that day, waiting for the Solemnity of Christ. So many, many ideas. But I would encourage people listening to make a little plan, December 8th, Mary, something in the house, St. Nicholas, some little chocolates and some shoes that people step on might be a great discussion starter, and then baking for Christ and pilgrimaging somewhere for the Lord, and just really having kids understand the beauty of what St. Francis was inspired to do to reinstill devotion to the Christ child was using live animals. It really reminds us of the lowliness of Christ, the humility of God, the vulnerability of God, and the goodness of all creation. So all those things matter, and that's why we accent the empty manger and the manger during these weeks right here.
And to celebrate, like you said, those special days coming up here, really in the next week, St. Nicholas Day on Tuesday the 6th, of course, the Immaculate Conception on the 8th, and then the 11th, that Sunday would be already the third Sunday in Advent, Gaudete Sunday. Well, thank you so much for the beautiful ideas, for great Advent traditions, and just a hearty encouragement for folks to engage kids in all of this. Father Marcel Tyone from Narragansett, Rhode Island at St. Thomas More Parish. Thanks again. Look forward to another chat, Lord willing, soon. We continue with Morning Air, a look at change. That's coming up next. Dave Duran joins us as Morning Air continues. Story Corner on the way as well here at Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. The Mary Biggers have something amazing in store for you and your family this coming Sunday night as we wrap up the first week of Advent. It's Christmas Live, a one-hour variety show celebrating Advent and the joy of the Christmas season. You'll smile, laugh, enjoy live musical performances. You might even find yourself singing along. We'll pause our regular mystery series on the night train during the month of December so you can tune in Sunday night at 6 for something special to prepare your hearts for Christmas. This weekend, Christmas Live, only on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. We are talking change this half hour. David Duran coming up in just a minute, and a story corner for Advent before we're through as well. Sarah, when the word change comes about, or even more so, an actual change, is that something you look forward to with anticipation, with perhaps joy or dread, or somewhere in between?
I guess it depends on what kind of change it is, right? When it's the change of maybe a new family member to your house, whether that's a pet or a little baby. Okay, that's a good change. Some changes, not so much. But I know that kids they really like their routine, as you were talking about earlier in a previous segment. So I know that kids don't like to have a lot of change, whether that's a bedtime routine or changing their underwear for that matter. So they don't like a lot of change. So I think that's a natural thing that we don't like that unknown. That's kind of scary. So it kind of put us off a little bit.
I'm thinking it might depend on our general experience with change. Of course, change anything different, and it can be good or bad. You know, for those looking for, you know, mixing something up in life. Now, I am one, you know, I tend to believe that furniture has, you know, like its ultimate best spot in a room necessarily. And, you know, I know there was a theory of where you change up the furniture to save the wear and tear and the carpet traffic patterns and things like that. But, you know, even as far as that, I like stuff we're in its best spot. But we're going to talk about handling change and more with Dave Duran, our success coach, joining us each and every week. Dave, one of my favorite changes, though, is when the vestments are changed over in church from ordinary time to Advent or Lent. And suddenly all those Wisconsin priests have to wear purple or violet. The Vikings colors. I love that, Dave. What do you think?
I literally, when you started, Glenn, I was like, when you started talking about a change that you love, I was like, he's definitely going to go. He's going to attack me where I'm weakest right now as a Packer fan. And then all of a sudden, here you start talking about vestments. I'm like, oh, he's taking the higher path. This is amazing. And then you somehow blended the two in a way that I'm going to take a couple of days to have to reconstruct in my own head. So
being gentle on you here in this beautiful spirit of love during Advent. We didn't talk quarterback changes, just colors, vestments is all. But Dave, joining us to talk about change today. Is it something, you know, embrace change, that's a saying, but we're going to look at all the elements, if it's a good change, or maybe if we're in charge of the change, we're more excited than those who have it foisted upon themselves.
Yeah, we do better to stay ahead of change. So there are changes that happen in our lives that we can't control. Some of them are negative changes, and we have to work through them. That's just a normal part of life. But generally speaking, we have to pay attention to the things we can control. If we don't, for example, change our health, okay, and by the way, because it's kind of a constant, never-ending improvement type philosophy, right? And it's not, I'm not talking about Beachbody. I'm just saying, hey, listen, you know, as I get older, when you're young, you change your body, you work out to build muscle in order to accomplish certain things athletically, whatever it is. At some point in life, you know, maybe those things go away. But you're saying, you know, my knee hurt, that was thrust upon me, I'm going to make a change so that it is better, and therefore I can stay healthy, and I can live a more productive life in that regard. The same thing with our minds. If we don't say, listen, I need to change my mind right now. Sure, I have I've had a conversion, but I need a deeper one. If I really want to know Christ, how can I stop learning now? I mean, I have to, this is not a lifetime of study. The only time that we actually know God is ultimately speaking to be in heaven in the beatific vision. Then we would fully have that. But we want to get to know the Lord as much as we can. Because why? Well, if we're going to love someone, we want to know them. That's just the way that it happens to be. So we have to continue to put change upon ourselves, because change is either, and I want people to look at it this way, growth or atrophy or severing. Those are the changes that we primarily experience. There are others, no doubt about it, but we either change to grow, to become better mentally, you know, in our faith life, physically, with our finances, in our relationships, that we will grow and become better, or those things will atrophy. They will go backwards. They don't really stay in the same place. And then sometimes a change is a severing. It's a different job. It's a move. It's relationships that are not the same as they were. Maybe it was a bad choice in friendships. Whatever it happens to be. And we have to consider that change should be managed and led, and we should control it as much as possible, but yet be docile to God's will.
Now, looking at that, we can look at all the advice we get from you in terms of family life, the workplace, and the like, but I often, football team, whatever it happens to be, but I often take what you talk about and imagine it in the workplace. And active management really is kind of always seeking, aren't they, change, growing to keep us doing good things even better and more productively. Or, you know, if we're not, they're taking note of that, and maybe they have to sever something if it's not working at all. But in terms of management, it's good to be actively pursuing change of one sort or not, even if it's just you're doing great, let's do more of that.
Right. I mean, and there's an interesting thing, because one of the things that it kills organizations is, well, we've always done it that way. Now, if we're talking about the original formula for Coca-Cola or a whiskey that takes 10 years to to be made, yeah, keep it that way. People like that. But maybe there's the ability to produce more of it, right? And there's an opportunity to do that. So what you change in an organization has to be, you know, selective carefully, but there has to be change. There's no doubt about it. And people hang on to old things. And the reason they do is because when you change a system or you change an idea or you change a process or you add new people, it usually means some form of sacrifice in the short term. Now, what's really interesting is sometimes you get a new tool, and that tool allows you in your organization to do things 1,000 times faster and 1,000 times easier. But you need to go through the short period of time of learning the tool, and you have to go through a period of time of letting go of your ego, which is to say, well, my idea or the way I did it, or I was the best at it the old way, or other people are going to challenge me because they're going to be better at the new way. Those are the things that get in the way a lot of times too. So you're exactly right. that in business, we have to be willing to change.
Well, we talk about change and we need to change and we think, well, that might be almost an impatient thing. But the thing is, we get so impatient, we hate to wait through that that learning curve at the beginning of using that changed system or that changed piece of equipment that ultimately will be for our good. But sometimes we need to work on the patience for that short term. And even people who are implementing the change, maybe they need to make sure that they allow for the learning curve time as well.
Well, this is an interesting thing, and I'm glad you're saying this, because when you're talking about organizational development and organizational growth, it really, you know, we do talk about how families are organizations. I mean, they're much more than that. But we, in a family, need to be able to adapt to change. The ages of the children, the responsibilities that they have, the fact that you're raising future adults, not actually kids, all of these different types of things, the wisdom and the knowledge that they're going to have. But in fact, in the parish life, in church life, it's the same way, too. I mean, if you think about how the church needs to use modern media in order to evangelize, and if it just said, well, we never did it that way, you know, well, that's a problem. It needs to be done that way. And that doesn't change the principles, the doctrines, the dogmas of the church. Those remain the same, but we do them in a different way. So you are right that change does hurt and is difficult for people. And leaders have to be very conscientious of this. You might come in with the greatest change ever, but if you don't communicate effectively the value of that change and also effectively the idea that you recognize there are certain pain points when you go through the change. Because as soon as somebody says, they can't relate to me, they don't understand me, they don't know what I'm going through, that's when you start to lose people. So to say, listen, this change is big. Here are the reasons we're doing it. Here are the reasons it might be hard. We totally understand that sort of thing. And we appreciate the fact that you are going to be able to, you know, embrace the change, even if it is a little bit difficult or you might not agree with it right away. We're all going to be better off. And now people are saying, okay, well, there's a place for me here because they get me. And that matters.
Is the length since the last big change really impact how people handle the current change?
Well, I think so, because the nature of these things also matters. Change for the sake of change is a really silly thing. And there are some people that do that. They just change things just because. Now, again, if you're talking about furniture because you are, you know, the type of person who just likes to see something differently when you walk into a room, fine, go ahead. It's not going to really have any sort of negative impact on things. But if you're talking about organizational change for the sake of organizational change, that's really a silly idea. Or if you're talking about whimsically changing what it is you're paying attention to, feeding your mind or even feeding your body and soul, that's a problem. You know, we always have to see, when we make change for something better or more, we always do well. And that's the general idea for human beings. I mean, just collectively and individually, it's the whole desire. Change should come from a positive desire. I desire to be better. I desire to be more. I desire to know more. I desire perfection. By the way, we all innately do desire this, because ultimately the only perfect anything is God, which is why whenever we, you know, we make something, we then want to make it better. A car 100 years ago is not as good as a car, you know, 80 years ago, as good as a car 60 all the way up to today. And we know that 20 years from now, cars are going to be better than they are today. And when we have a great cheeseburger, we might love that cheeseburger, but we're kind of always looking for, oh, there's even a better one? You know, I can't even believe that. Sure, I'll try the better one until I have the perfect one. And so this is a part of change. And as long as that change takes us up and doesn't change us by pulling us down, we need to seek it.
Don't change that dial. There's more coming up with Dave Durand, our success coach, as we continue with Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Looking at life from a Catholic worldview, this is Morning Air.
playing air guitar and talking to Dave Duran this morning as Morning Air continues. It's Sarah and Glenn in for John today, talking about rolling with the changes with Dave Duran, author, speaker, executive coach, co-founder, and executive chairman of Best Version Media, and a joyful guest for years and years and years here Wednesday mornings on Morning Air. Dave, as we continue to chat about change a little bit, knowing that change hurts, but it can invigorate the group a little bit if we're all kind of going through it together and acknowledging that change can hurt a little bit too.
It's true. It is an invigorating thing. There's no doubt about it. You know, we talk about the difficult side of change, but there is an inspiring side of change. Oh, there's something, finally, we're going to do something new here. I have hope. Why? Well, when you think about it organizationally, people are very hesitant. There's a certain personality type, but not generally. People are very hesitant to want to be in the same place for very long. I mean, there are some people who would say they just want like a constant stability, but really even then they want a pay raise. Most of the time they want more responsibility. They want better tools. I mean, if you really want to make somebody happy at work, give them greater responsibility, give them a greater reward for the work that they're doing, but give them the tools and the resources and the authority to do it in the same or less amount of time. Now you have like the ultimate combination. Wait, I can get more, receive more, do more, have more influence, have more power, and I can do it with the same level of efficiency or even more than that? Oh, I'm all in. Well, that requires change. And most people, if they've been in a pattern of good change within an organization, recognize that while there is a short-term learning curve possibly or some adaptation, it leads to something way more. And they're conditioned eventually, if they've been under the banner of good leadership, to see this as something that is invigorating.
How important is it to sell that change? We talked a little before the break about not changing just to change, but to hold on to the good and, you know, change what's wrong. But sometimes the perception can be that a change is done capriciously, and then it's really hard to get folks to buy in.
Yeah, I have recognized this to be probably one of the most important things. And I would say that it is and I'm glad you're keying on it, Glenn, because it's one of the things that does separate great organizations from other organizations, is it's not so much that a change is taking place, but see, when you make it, okay, so I'll give this from a perspective of a larger organization, and this could happen in a small organization too, but in a larger organization where you don't have like one person who owns the company and then two employees where you can sit down at coffee and you can work through everything, you have to make sure that whatever communication is coming from that boardroom or from the CEO is you don't have the game of telephone where it sounds different by the time it gets to somebody else, or that it doesn't even get to the other person, or what gets there is the most linear idea without philosophy behind it. So I've seen organizations make great changes but implement them so poorly that they literally lose people, actually, they quit, or they lose people in spirit, or as you said, they are now unmotivated because they don't understand what's taking place. It just seems like more work to them. And so they're not on board, and now the organization goes through something slow, and sometimes they have to reboot what it is they did. Whereas if they'd have done it the first time the right way, it doesn't mean you're going to get everybody to agree. You still might lose some people. That's fine. But now you're losing the people you should, because they're saying, I fully understand what you're doing. I fully understand the motives behind why you're doing it. And I don't fit here anymore. Okay, fine. Then bye. That's too bad. But now you know. The worst thing is when a person would have liked the change if they would have understood it, but they didn't. And now they're in that same spot. So being very articulate about the communication is important.
Now, Dave, it can depend on what the change is and what the organization is, but is it a good idea when possible to kind of give some advance notice and hints? I mean, sometimes things need to be a surprise. Sometimes things don't need to be a surprise, but because someone has authority, they're kind of handled as if they're a surprise. Is unnecessary surprise with change maybe a bad thing?
I like the way you summarize that. I would say unnecessary surprise is a bad thing. But this is also a very interesting thing because, from a strategic perspective, there are times where the change needs to be abrupt. Then there are times where planning ahead for it makes more sense. Then there are times where there's a partial formula there where this they should know about and this they shouldn't. Now, these shouldn't ever be about like secrecy for the purpose of, you know, a non-transparent move in order to have advantage over people. But, you know, one of the reasons that this is important is, let's say, for example, somebody says, hey, we're going to go through a restructuring in the organization. That'll be coming 3 months from now. We just wanted to give you a heads up. Oh, that is a really bad move. Well, wait a second. Who's my, wait, my opportunity? Am I going to get fired? Huh? And now they get skittish and they might want to leave, when in reality, maybe that restructuring had nothing to do with anybody getting laid off and everything to do with the fact that there were going to be more promotions because you need more people in leadership because your organization is growing so fast that there's way bigger opportunity. And now you lose people because they get the wrong sense of things. And then they misread something too. So you have one canceled order and somebody looks at that and says, well, they were saying that there's going to be a change coming up. I see this canceled order. Maybe the organization's not doing very well. I need to go someplace. When in reality, you might have had 15 orders that were bigger than anything ever before. And one canceled order out of 15 is, you know, par for the course. And they don't see the 15 because, you know, they're now confused. So it's a really important thing to say, hey, what needs to be shared now for the good? And you know, Glenn, what's so good about this? If you love the people you work with, okay, you will want to will their good. And this makes the formula so simple. Okay, well, I love the people I work with. I want to will their good. What is the best thing for them in this communication? What is the best thing for them in this change? And then what will happen is your organization, the people with you, will start to recognize that when you do things, you don't do things to hurt them. You do things to help them. And they're going to see that side of it, even if at first it might appear otherwise.
We've been talking a lot about change and the scary side of change with Dave Durand this morning. But in any difficult endeavor, we know that people have made it through. Recently in conversation, the concept came up in dealing with kids is, you know, not everything in life is going to be easy. There'll be hard things, but you can do hard things. And if we look to some heroes, saints, etc., that have successfully managed change, they've done that hard thing to change, that can, you know, give us that yay, rah, rah we need to power through.
I think this is one of the most valuable things, is to say, who has been where I am and where did they go? And it doesn't mean that, you know, you can use an example of the same technology from 30 years ago, but it wouldn't matter. I mean, if you want to think about the technology to take people to the moon today, and the technology that was used to take people to the moon, I'm holding in my hand greater technology by about 1,000, no, probably almost, it's an exaggeration, but not my much, to say that the technology I have in my hand is nearly infinite, you know, it's immeasurably more advanced than what was taken to the moon, you know, 50 some years ago. So, but you would still say, what did those men go through? What were they thinking? How did they handle an emergency from a psychological perspective and an emotional perspective? And how can I, what can I learn from that? It's the same thing with all the saints for us, is to say, well, what challenges did the saints go through? I can tell you right now, human nature has not changed and it's not going to change. So whether the temptation came in, you know, modern forms, the temptations were still there. Now, there might have been more or less according to, you know, the era, but at the end of the day, we can recognize that there were some saints that lived pretty badly, behaved quite badly, and yet they made a profound change and they found great joy in that. And then we can say to ourselves, how can I emulate that? What it is about their behavior, their willingness to be docile to God's will. And if they went through that, then that means that there's a place for me to go through that too.
Also good, Dave, to remember that from our own internal point of view, it's never too late to change for the better.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. The biggest thing that we have to work on changing is ourselves. And if we ever find ourselves saying, I no longer need to change, That is a decision to actually atrophy. That is a decision to change, but it is a change for the worse. So we need to stay as in control of this as we possibly can. And when things are thrust upon us, find the areas that we can actually change and grow to be better despite the setbacks.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. Great conversation about change. Always enjoy these opportunities. That's Dave Duran joining us just about every Wednesday, this portion of the program. The Lord willing, doing it again next week here on Relevant Radio. Morning Air continues now with today's Advent-related Story Corner. Our story today called My First Christmas in Heaven. I see the countless Christmas trees around the world below with tiny lights like heaven's stars reflecting on the snow. The sight is so spectacular. Please wipe away the tear, for I'm spending Christmas with Jesus Christ this year. I hear the many Christmas songs that people hold so dear, but the sounds of music can't compare with the Christmas choir up here. I have no words to tell you the joy their voices bring, for it is beyond description to hear the angels sing. I know how much you miss me. I see the pain inside your hearts, but I am not so far away. We really aren't apart. So be happy for me, dear ones. You know I hold you dear, and be glad I'm spending Christmas with Jesus Christ this year. I send you each a special gift from my heavenly home above. I send you each a memory of my undying love. After all, love is a gift more precious than pure gold. It was always the most important in the stories Jesus told. Please love and keep each other, as my Father said to do, for I can't count the blessing or love He has for each of you. So have a Merry Christmas and wipe away that tear. Remember, I'm spending Christmas with Jesus Christ this year. John 14:3. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you may also be where I am. That's our story today. If you'd like to catch it again, you can always catch the Story Corner in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app or on the Relevant Radio website. Just access the Glenn Story Corner archives there, and we'd love to share that with you. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for Story Corners, too. You're always welcome to send them along, something you've run across or maybe even written yourself. You can email it to morningair@relevantradio.com. That's morningair@relevantradio.com. As we like to say during the Relevant Radio pledge drives, not a penny was spent on accordion lessons. And to prove that, there you go. No, that was pre-recorded, but it was actually me after I don't know how many takes. But happy birthday to morning show producer Gabby Burke. Thank you, Gabby, for all the work you do lining up stuff each and every day for us here. We appreciate that so much. So happy birthday to you. Thanks for joining us. More straight ahead. He knows all the rules, a few of the loopholes, but the love behind him as well. Patrick Madrid and Sidekick Cyrus, all coming up next here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Thank you, Sarah. Great job today playing the tunes. More straight ahead.